When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace. May is Mental Health Awareness Month, and Talkspace, the leading virtual therapy provider, is encouraging people to talk it out in therapy. By talking or texting with a supportive, licensed therapist at Talkspace, you'll gain insights, discover truths, and experience breakthroughs that will improve how you live and how you feel. With Talkspace, just answer a few questions online, and you'll be matched with a therapist. And because you'll meet your therapist online, you don't have to take time off work or arrange childcare. You'll meet on your schedule, whenever you feel most at ease. Plus, Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members only pay a $25 copay or less. No insurance? No problem. If you want to make progress toward a mentally healthier place, Talkspace is here for you. Now get $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
A man called George Chapman died in 2006. He was brought up in the working class Docklands area of Merseyside, Liverpool. He worked variously as a docker, a firefighter, and he was a professional boxer. Maurice Barbanel, former Fleet Street newspaper editor, once remarked about Chapman, "When spiritualism's history comes to be written, the Lang-Chapman partnership, which has brought health to thousands of sufferers after their cases were called hopeless, will contribute some of the most illumined pages." And this will shortly be explained. During World War II, Chapman became an Air Force commander and then joined the Marines, where he taught unarmed combat. He met his wife, Margaret, in 1945, and they had a daughter, Vivian. But sadly, she died just 4 weeks after her birth. This tragedy caused Chapman to consider, was there an afterlife? In search of answers, he turned to the clergy, but they warned him not to dabble in the supernatural. After the war, Chapman joined the fire brigade, where he met a fellow fireman called Leslie Miles. On the long night shifts between emergency calls, Miles would experiment with an upturned tumbler and the letters of the alphabet in an attempt to receive messages from the spirit world. And it wasn't long before the rest of the fire crew, their curiosity aroused, joined in with him. Soon they were all sitting around the table at night at the fire station, putting their fingers on the glass and watching it move from letter to letter to spell out words and phrases. Meanwhile at home, Chapman began to do the same thing with his wife. And before long, he was stunned to receive a message, purportedly from his dead mother, who had died when he was just 5 years old. Of course, he needed to check that he wasn't simply deluding himself, and so he asked his relatives to see if what his dead mother had told him could be verified. To his surprise, his relatives confirmed it all to be completely correct. This helped Chapman to believe that there really could be a life after death, and he began to spend a couple of hours at home every day trying to receive more messages from spirits. To his surprise, many of the messages they gave him told him that he was a healer. Well, as well as being a fireman, Chapman was a professional boxer. So how on earth, he thought to himself, could he be a healer? He had to find out more, and so soon he put together a development circle with like-minded people, where further spirit messages repeated to him that he was a healer. Spirits were coming through Chapman, even though he had no idea at the time, because he had gone into trance, so he was completely oblivious to it. The spirits said they were healers too, and they were going to work with Chapman. According to Chapman's later biography, one of the spirits was introduced to us as Dr. Lang. Dr. Lang told them that Chapman would be working with him to heal sick patients. Well, Chapman didn't take this as fact, of course. After all, it sounded completely incredulous. And firstly, he wanted to know if a Dr. Lang had ever even really existed. He wanted absolute proof, he said. Too many alleged spirit guides do not stand up to critical exam, he wrote, and the spirit communicating with them should be able to give dates, names, and details of their earthly experiences. Dr. Lang duly went on to give these names, dates, places for the purpose of verification, and Chapman duly checked them out. He said there were colleagues of Lang still in practice. There were also patients who had consulted him while he was a surgeon on Earth, and they confirmed it was the same Dr. Lang they had known. Well, pretty soon Chapman began to do what the spirits were urging him to do, to try to become a healer and treat people, and he set up a clinic at his home in Aylesbury. One of his patients was a Dr. Kildare Singer, who had been taught ophthalmology by Dr. Lang at the Middlesex Hospital and happened to be suffering now with cancer. When Dr. Singer came to hear that people were visiting Chapman to receive spiritual healing, he paid Chapman a visit. At the time, he had no idea that Chapman was working with a dead Dr. Lang, his former medical tutor. But, says Chapman, recognition came instantly when he walked into my healing sanctuary. Lang, speaking through my lips, greeted him with the words, "Hello, my dear boy, I'm so happy to see you again." Dr. Singer instantly recognised the characteristic voice of Dr. Lang. There was also a Mrs. Catherine Pickering. She came to Chapman for healing too. She'd been a patient of Dr. Lang for 15 years, from the age of 4, suffering with myopia after catching measles. Again, through Chapman's developing reputation as a spiritual healer, she had come to hear of him, but she did not know about the dead Dr. Lang. When she entered Chapman's treatment room, she suddenly heard the distinct voice of her old doctor, Dr. Lang, who greeted her by saying, "It's nice to see you again after all these years, Topsy. I remember you when you were so high." Mrs. Pickering then explained to Chapman Dr. Lang had always called her Topsy. It was around this time that Chapman met a man who claimed to be able to draw spirits, and Chapman asked him if he would try to draw Dr. Lang. When Chapman showed Mrs. Pickering the sketch, she immediately recognised it as her old doctor. The sketch also closely matched a photo of Dr. Lang that Chapman had discovered in an old medical book. Also, by scouring through the records at the Middlesex Hospital and of the Board of Surgeons, it was possible to identify Dr. Lang had really existed. The records said he was William Lang, born on December the 28th, 1852 in Devon, to the son of a wealthy merchant, who had sent him to Moravia boarding school in Lausanne, Switzerland. At the age of 18, Lang had been trained as a doctor at the London Hospital, where he qualified as a member of the Royal College of Surgeons. He became a fellow 5 years later. During his career, he was a house physician and a surgeon, as well as a teacher of anatomy. He specialised in optometry and became assistant surgeon at the Central London Ophthalmic Hospital, then transferred to the Middlesex Hospital. In 1880, he had a son followed by a daughter. He lived with his wife in Wood Green, a North London suburb, until they moved to Chiswick in West London. Dr. Lang carried out important medical research as well as surgery, and he developed Lang's Drops, which was a solution of cocaine and tropine to be used in eye operations. And he created twin knives for use in cataract operations, as well as pioneering many treatments which would go on to be used as best practice. He was highly regarded and liked by all who knew him. His son Basil followed in his footsteps and also became a surgeon. In fact, father and son sometimes worked together in the operating theatre. Sadly, his son Basil caught pneumonia in 1928 and passed away before Dr. Lang. When George Chapman died in 2006, a Daily Telegraph obituary said, "George Chapman, aged 85, was said to be one of Britain's most remarkable healers. For 60 years, he treated patients from all walks of life, including celebrities and members of the medical profession, by going into a state of trance and allowing the spirit of William Lang to operate through him, whose cultured tones from beyond the grave were a stark contrast to those of the Liverpudlian fireman through whom he spoke." Dr. Lang's daughter, Lyndon, and his granddaughter, Susan Fairlow, both confirmed that the voice coming out of George Chapman's mouth was Dr. Lang's. Both said not only were his speech and mannerisms just as they remembered, but Dr. Lang gave information on people and places and events that George Chapman could not have possibly known about. Mrs. Barlow, Dr. Lang's granddaughter, once said, "To my great horror, or rather stupefaction, the man who was in this room was indisputably my grandfather. It was not him physically, but it was his voice, his behaviour. It was unquestionable. He spoke to me and evoked precise events of my childhood." Lang's daughter was so convinced she was speaking to her dead father that twice a month for many years she asked Chapman to hold seances at a private members' club in London, and she would invite former colleagues and old friends of Lang to attend. After Dr. Lang's daughter had watched George Chapman carry out his healing sessions, she said, "I can truthfully say that the William Lang who operates through the body of George Chapman is without a doubt my father." Of the thousands of patients treated by Dr. Lang from the afterlife through the hands of George Chapman, they included an 80-year-old lady living in Paris by the name of Madame Germaine Petitjean. It was 1974 and she'd gone to her doctor about a growth in her left breast. Her doctor had sent her for hospital tests, which sadly confirmed that she had cancer and would need an operation. The operation was scheduled for a few weeks' time, but meanwhile she came to hear about Chapman and his spirit work through some friends. She was greatly concerned about having an operation at her age, and so she felt she had nothing to lose by making an appointment to see Mr. Chapman. At the time, he was only offering appointments in Switzerland, and so she made the journey to see him there and had two appointments with him during her brief stay. Chapman later wrote, "She arrived back in France cured of her cancer. The growth in her breast had disappeared. The doctors were stupefied." This was just one of Chapman's early healings. A Mr. Gulligar, also living in France, was healed of an eye tumour. Both patients were happy to write testimonials for Chapman. Another patient, Joseph Tanguy, was diagnosed with a brain tumour. An operation had only succeeded in removing a small part of it because to take any more of it out was far too dangerous. He was given 6 months to live. However, his doctor, through a friend, came to hear about Chapman, and he advised the patient to go to visit Chapman. Before Tanguy came to see him, Chapman started giving distance healing to him. Then, when Tanguy came for his appointment, Dr. Lang, in spirit, got to work. A series of three healing treatments were given to him over a number of weeks. When a subsequent EEG examination took place in hospital, it was observed that there was a considerable improvement in the patient's condition. Further distance healing was sent to him by Chapman, and eventually another EEG determined that the tumour had completely vanished. Tanguy's physician, Dr. S, later wrote a testimonial vouching for the healing, saying, "The results of Dr. Lang's work are really exceptional, and in one case, Mr. Tanguy's, miraculous. I have therefore complete trust in sending to him those whom all known therapies have failed, and I also believe, as does Dr. Lang, that spiritual healing cannot be separated from physical healing." Soon, Chapman would have a team of 9 typists answering all the letters he received requesting appointments with him, although Chapman insisted on opening every letter himself personally. Dr. Lang explained to Chapman how the healing took place, how it was possible. Dr. Lang said, "The fact is, we are all spiritual beings. Our bodies are like spiritual overcoats. The etheric body acts as a go-between for the physical and spirit bodies." Lang explained that we have 3 bodies, the physical, the spiritual, and the etheric. He said, "The spiritual body shapes itself around the human body, taking on the same appearance. The etheric is the go-between body, and it supplies us with the energy." He said, "If you were to develop a tumour, the tumour would also show in your spirit body too. Your spirit body is the real you, the non-physical you." He said, "People think the mind is in the brain. That's like confusing the typist with the typewriter, or the musician with the violin." When Dr. Lang performed his healings, he worked on the spirit body of a person, he explained, and the healing would then trickle in into the person's physical body. Among the many thousands of people treated by Chapman and the Dead Doctor was the famous writer of Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, Ronald Dahl. Another case of a patient healed involved a sceptical journalist called Bernard Hutton, who was so impressed that he would go on to write the book Healing Hands, based on his own uncanny experience with Chapman and Dr. Lang. It all began when Hutton visited his doctor, who told him that he was going blind from non-paralytic poliomyelitis. Upon receiving this devastating diagnosis, Hutton's wife, having heard about Chapman's work, persuaded Hutton to book an appointment. As a last resort and purely to please his wife, Hutton reluctantly agreed. Before his arrival at Chapman's healing sanctuary, Hutton had told nothing to Chapman about his medical condition. This was standard practice for Chapman. He never inquired why a patient was booking an appointment and never asked for any personal details about them. For one thing, he was far too busy, needing a team of 9 typists just to handle his thousands of letters each week. And for another, he had no medical training or knowledge anyway, so it wouldn't help if he knew what was wrong with the patient. Besides which, once the patient entered Chapman's treatment room, Chapman would drift off into a trance and Dr. Lang would take over. When Hutton arrived, he was quick to observe that Chapman appeared to already be in a trance because his eyes didn't seem to be open at all. This was all very strange to Hutton, and his shock was compounded further when suddenly a very clipped, upper-class and obviously well-educated voice began to come out of the Liverpudlian Chapman's mouth. It was so distinctly different to the working-class Merseyside accent of the former fireman and marine Chapman. The voice declared that the lenses in Hutton's glasses were of a minus 18 strength, and that as a child Hutton had had a splint operation on both eyes. With Chapman's eyes still closed, the voice continued, stating that a virus had brought on Hutton's current illness and that Hutton's doctor believed it to be a non-paralytic type of poliomyelitis. The voice added that Hutton now also had an undiagnosed but very serious virus affecting his liver. Hutton would later say, "If I'd been amazed before, I was speechless now. I had not told Chapman anything about my own doctor, nor had I mentioned being ill." As Hutton lay on the treatment bed, the voice of Dr. Lang then announced that he would begin to operate on Hutton's eyes. Dr. Lang said, "You may hear me talking, calling out names and asking for instruments, but don't be alarmed. I shall be assisted in this operation by my son Basil and various other colleagues. You won't be able to see them because they have passed into spirit. You won't feel any pain." I think if I had been Hutton at this point, I would have got up and run, but to Hutton's credit, he stayed there on the treatment bed, and the operation commenced. Chapman began to move his hands, hovering them over Hutton's eyes, and Hutton could hear Chapman clicking his fingers and making odd movements above him. "Then," said Hutton, "incredible as it may seem, I experienced the physical sensation of incisions being made. Painless, but nonetheless capable of being felt. He didn't touch me, yet a little later I felt as though he was stitching up the wounds." When it was all over, Hutton sat up, quite understandably feeling a bit dazed. Suddenly, he realised he could barely see. As he looked around the room, he could barely distinguish between light and dark now. He was panicking. What was he going to do? Would this be permanent? In his absolute shock, Hutton somehow made his way back to the car, where his wife sat patiently waiting. He rued the moment he'd agreed to his wife's suggestion to visit Chapman. This was a disaster. He was worse off than when he'd walked in. Now he was practically blind. He felt disoriented and he couldn't stop shaking. As his wife drove them away from Chapman's home, Hutton sat in the passenger seat in silence, dread and panic. About 10 minutes into the drive, as he gazed almost blind now out of the car window, very slowly he noticed that he could see the shape of a tree. He said, "I thought it was my imagination, but it sharpened and came into focus. First, I could distinguish the large branches, then the smaller ones, and finally, the naked winter twigs. Closed my eyes in disbelief. When I opened them again, I noticed that the windscreen was dirty and needed wiping. He exclaimed aloud in amazement and joy. Not only had his vision come back, but he now no longer needed his -18 glasses. He could see everything in minute detail. As a result of his remarkable healing, Hutton felt driven to go on to collect testimonies from many of Chapman's other patients, who'd also been miraculously healed by Dr. Lang, and as a result were no longer suffering from an array of disabilities, diseases, and even terminal illnesses. Chapman described how the healings would be facilitated. He said he would close his eyes and drift off into a trance, like a kind of daydream, and then he would find himself reaching for invisible medical instruments in order to perform the surgery, even though no real scalpels were in the room with him, and of course, Chapman had no medical training anyway. This is just like the other psychic surgeons I have personally known, been treated by, and described in my previous book, Proof of the Afterlife. Yes, there are fakes out there, as there are con artists in all walks of life, but when you've been to see as many healers as I have over the last 2 or 3 years and experienced their sessions, it does become possible to weed out the phony ones, especially when the most mind-blowing things have happened are the genuine ones, as I've written about in the book. Funnily enough, I've got to know another psychic surgeon called Brian Walsh. He's an Englishman who works out of Portugal. Talking to him recently one day, I asked him if he was aware what spirits were working through him to give the healing to his patients, and he replied that he wasn't really sure, but the spirits had mentioned the name Dr. Lang. I asked him if he knew who this was, and he replied that he had no idea. Returning to Dr. Lang and Chapman, when Hutton asked Dr. Lang to explain how this healing was carried out, Dr. Lang said he would give a simplified version that he hoped could be understood by the layman. He said the healing takes place upon the spirit body of the patient, which brings about a change in the physical body. He said the spirit body exists just outside the physical body and is wrapped around the physical body, although it can't be seen by people who aren't clairvoyant, but it's the same as the physical body, apart from being comprised of a different texture, and it doesn't die like the physical body. Dr. Lang explained that he could see this spirit body and the diseases within it because it reflected the physical body and the diseases. This, along with Dr. Lang's ability to see a person's aura, enabled him to easily assess a person's state of illness. Dr. Lang said, "I can also see the person's aura, or reflected light, which is constantly moving and changing colour, and exists about 2 inches from the body. Each organ, when healthy, reflects a definite colour in the aura, but when the organ is diseased, the reflection changes colour, so he can see the disease." He explained that when he carried out this psychic surgery, he would utilise healing vibrations of divine source coming directly from God, along with power from the spirits. He said these were the same vibrations Christ and clerics of all religions had used in the old days when they carried out healings. Dr. Lang added that he did not work alone, but had a team of dead doctors and surgeons working with him to assist in his spirit surgery, including his deceased son Basil. In fact, after George Chapman died in 2006, his son Michael, who had grown up watching and helping his father in the treatment room, began working with Dr. Lang's deceased son Basil to continue the legacy of the spiritual healing partnership to this day. So Michael Chapman now works exactly as his father George did, except he's assisted by the spirit of Basil. Dr. Lang continued to explain that he used spirit instruments, like a surgeon would do, but it was far easier to operate on the spirit body than a physical body. After all, there was no blood, no pain, no tissue healing when using the spirit body instead of the physical one. Roy Stemmern, former editor of Psychic News, also experienced a healing session with Dr. Lang. As Stemmern lay on the treatment bed, the voice of Dr. Lang told Stemmern that when he got older, it was likely he would have trouble with his tear ducts. Stemmern had told Chapman nothing at all about himself, including about his health or that of his family's, and they'd never met before. Talking to Jeffrey Mishlove of New Thinking Aloud podcast, Stemmen explains that both his mother and his aunt had suffered with tear duct problems. Although Stemmen himself had no problems now with his eyes, but both his mother and aunt had needed operations to have artificial tear ducts inserted into their eyes. Stemmen explains what happened when he went to see Chapman that day. He said, "I first heard William Lang's voice when I was in the waiting room. I was the first person he was going to see that day, and I heard this huge voice echoing around the consultation room, saying a prayer. When Stemmen was ushered into the treatment room, he said Lang spoke in a very cultured voice. He had a very nice bedside manner, often joked, but it was like talking to a Victorian gentleman. He was clearly somebody that had lived in an earlier age and still had the manners and culture of that period. I'm not saying that George Chapman didn't have those manners, but out of trance, he was a very ordinary person, loved a good laugh, enjoyed a drink, was very sociable, but they were like chalk and cheese, two different people altogether. He was brought up in Liverpool. He didn't have a thick Liverpudlian accent, but it was a typical 20th century accent of that period. He would sometimes stumble over a few words that he'd not come across before. He would never claim to have been highly educated, but Lang had quite a vast vocabulary and a great knowledge of the period of time when he was practising on Earth." Stemmen also says he recommended Chapman to a well-known newspaper cartoonist called Colin Earle, who has drawn cartoons for various newspapers and magazines. At the time, Colin was suffering with a detached retina, so he made an appointment to see Chapman. Stemmen says, "I remember him telling me that he was quite amazed when he mentioned to Dr. Lang that he was a cartoonist. Lang began talking about his favourite cartoonists from the late 18th and 19th century, that he'd used to enjoy seeing their work, and he knew one of them, which was quite amazing. Lang carried out an operation on Colin's eyes, and then requested that Colin return in 2 weeks' time. In the second appointment, to Colin's surprise, Dr. Lang didn't mention or look at his eyes at all, but instead he poked and prodded the area around Colin's heart, then told him that as soon as he got home, he must immediately go to see his doctor and ask for a check-up on his heart." Stemmen says, "Colin was not happy with that at all. He came out of the clinic and told his companion, 'The man's a fraud. He's not even looked at my eyes. He's forgotten what he did or why I went there the last time.' Colin and his companion went to the nearest pub and had a drink, then drove the long distance back home, with Colin in a very bad mood. 3 days later, Colin had a heart attack and was rushed to hospital. He did survive, but looking back, he realised that obviously Dr. Lang knew a lot more than Colin did. When he had told him, he must see his doctor about his heart." Stemmen says he now has in his possession an array of files full of testimonies from hospital doctors and general practitioners who referred their patients to Chapman for healing. It was Stemmen's job, while working at Psychic News, to travel around and verify any testimonies that were given in order that they could be fact-checked before going into publication in the magazine. Stemmen says some of them were absolutely astonishing in terms of having been told by medical professionals that there was nothing more that could be done for them. But Dr. Lang rose to the challenge and was able to. Well, as I've mentioned, I've recently been receiving spiritual healing myself from a medium called Brian Walsh. Brian runs a healing sanctuary in Portugal. When I'd asked him what spirits were working through him, he said he didn't know, but that the spirits had mentioned the name Dr. Lang to him, but he said to me he had no idea who that was. Well, like most healers and psychics, Brian didn't deliberately set out on this path. It seems to have been chosen for him from a young age. As a child, he began seeing spirit children. He said, "I was just 4 years old when I began to see beings from the other side. Not that I knew where they were from or cared at that age. They were just people to play with. Then, when he turned 7, he began to see his dead grandfather. He said, at the age of 7, my long-since-deceased grandfather began turning up in my bedroom and talking to me about the future. Much later, Brian discovered that his mother's aunt had been a famous tea leaf reader in Ireland in the 40s and 50s, so it seems possible that it runs in his blood. But he also realised that this was not the norm, that not everyone could see spirits and talk to them, and most people considered it plain weird to say such things. As a result, he learned to keep these things to himself and just drew away from spiritualism, trying to live an ordinary life like everyone else. It worked until the day of his 26th birthday. He said, "I was stabbed through the heart in a senseless brawl. The paramedics thought they had a dead man in the back of their ambulance as they drove me to the hospital." However, Brian didn't die. He said, "Over the following days, I managed to somehow heal on my own with no medical assistance. The doctors christened me the Miracle Man. They couldn't believe their eyes." Despite this heavenly intervention, Brian still tried to bury his abilities. He said, "I still wasn't ready to embrace my connection with the spirit world. I continued to push away the messages and strange knowings that rose intermittently in my mind." Then his father passed away. He said, "When my father died in my arms, I watched his spirit rise up from his body. In that moment, he felt he could no longer ignore his relationship with the spirit world. But I felt my resistance dissolve away. I could no longer hide from who I was or what I was supposed to do with my life." At the time, Brian was working in the City of London in marketing. Suddenly, he found that everything he touched was a success. His wealth dramatically increased. But at around the same time, a family member living in Ireland was diagnosed with a fatal brain tumour. He was told it was inoperable. He was going to die. Brian said, "I felt compelled to fly over there to be by his bedside, and to everyone's astonishment, by the time I returned home a week later, the tumour completely vanished." This isn't the first time this has happened with Brian's intervention. When I spoke to him very recently, he explained he'd been a bit preoccupied. He'd been giving distance healing to his mother, who'd been rushed into intensive care in England. He would have loved to have flown back to England to be with her, but the situation was so dire that the hospital didn't think she would still be alive by the time he landed in the UK. So he sprang into action in Portugal and immediately started sending her spiritual healing from there. Miraculously, she made a fast and full recovery and was sent home, much to the stunned reaction of his brothers who were at the hospital with her.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.